But yeah, so I lived out there for 6 months. I lived in Kampala, which is in Uganda. And then I moved to a village called Subi Village, and I lived there for most of my time. And then I ended up moving back to Gulu, which is about 6 hours away by the Congo and Sudan. I lived out there for like a month. Yeah, about a month. Then I moved back to Kampala. And so what I was doing, I was working with Watoto. And what they do, it's just amazing. We support Watoto and we work with Watoto and we support them financially. So pretty much, if you guys support The Rock, you guys are doing all this too. So I went out there and I was working at the baby's home. And what they do is absolutely phenomenal. It is just amazing to see what God's doing. Well, what we do is, well, this, they started a church because everything comes from the church. The church is called to do these things. And then they built these babies' homes where there was a lot of abandoned babies or maybe their mothers had died from HIV/AIDS. And we would find these babies in latrines. We would find them in long drops, which is, you know, like they don't have toilets out there. So it was like a hole. And then inside the hole was where they put the baby. We'd find them at police stations, in hospitals. We'd go to hospitals to pick them up. And I found it amazing because it was funny because the city depended on this church. And I believe that the government isn't anointed to feed the poor. And it's not anointed to heal the city, but the church is. And it was so evident. Just like our church feeds the city more than the government could ever feed them. I mean, we do amazing. And out there, when they would get a baby, when something would go wrong, they'd call the church. Just last week, I left just before this happened, but there was bombs in Kabalagaba, which is right down from my street. And actually, two of my friends were there. And a lot, 64 people died. And when that happened, they called the church, you know? And when things go wrong, they call the church. And I find it amazing because that's what we're called to do. That's who we're called to be. And so we'd go, when they call us, we'd go and we pick up these babies and they're malnourished and they're abused. They were sexually abused. Some of them were preemies. They're so small. You could just hold them in your hand and they're like yellow because I forget what they have, and they have something that makes them yellow, you know? And they're all these colors, and these babies are so sick. And we take these babies, and we nurse them back to health. And once they can run around, and they can walk, and they can do a little bit of talking, and they can start to feed themselves, then we send them to a village. We don't just keep them in an orphanage. We send them to a village in a real house that we built that's beautiful. And we have a mother and seven other siblings. And so they're in a real family. And so it was amazing to see what Toto was doing. Then, and I also got to be a part of what was going out in Gulu. And if you don't know what happened in Gulu, I think it was in the 1980s, the late 1980s, the LRA came through, which was a militia group against the Ugandan government. And they came through and they slaughtered people. They murdered people. They murdered families, raped women, took them as captives, took them as sex slaves, took children, made them become child soldiers. I'm sure you've heard of some of it. And so I got to go out there and see these places. I got to go in the houses and see where the child that once was there is now a child soldier and missing. You know, I got to see the women with their faces cut off and their lips cut off. I got to see women who were captured at 13 years old, were sex slaves for 10 years and just escaped. You know, I got to see that. And it was amazing to see, and it sounds so sad, but to see the redemption, to see the revelation of Jesus Christ in their lives, I mean, that was amazing. And so they started something called Living Hope. And if you don't know what that is, what it is, it's specifically for the women who were captured by the LRA. And it's specifically for them. They give them trauma counseling. They give them discipleship. They teach them business classes. They teach them how to start their own business because many of them have women from before they were captured or maybe during from when they were captured. And they have these children they have to provide. And it's so great because it's not a handout. It's an empowerment. They empower them to be something better. They empower them to do something with their lives. And so it was so great seeing all of this. And then I think the biggest thing that changed my life was here, you know, you fit God into your life. You're like, okay, this is where God fits. It's perfect. You know, if something bad happens, you kind of question it, not too much, because then you have to go deep, you know? And that's how I was living here. But when I went out there, and it's in your face, when I went out there and there's a baby in my hand and his heart stops, I question things. You know, when I go out there and I see a 3-year-old who weighs as much as a 3-month-old and is depressed and is abused, I question things. And so I began to ask God, okay, God, where do you fit into this? Because if I didn't ask that question, somewhere along the way, I would hit a wall. Somewhere along the way in my relationship with God, when something went wrong, when something horrible happened, when I didn't agree with something, and if I didn't get the answer to this question, I would hit a wall and my faith would crumble. And so, first of all, I didn't want to ask the question because, I mean, think about when you have a question for God. First of all, you don't want to ask it because what if he doesn't answer, right? Like, what if he doesn't answer? Then you're like, oh, crap, does he exist now? You know, it goes a whole another thing. And so I was like, okay, I kind of don't want to ask because what if he doesn't answer? Then number two, what if he does answer? And I don't like his answer. And I don't understand his answer. So it took me like a month. And finally, I was like, okay, God, you have to speak to me. I trust you and I know you're good and I know you're just. But I just don't understand how I can see these villages of poverty. I can see villages going underwater when it rains, everything being demolished. I don't understand how this can be, you know. And so I began to question God. And I remember one specific time when we got this three-year-old. Her name was Mercy, and she was beautiful. She had the most beautiful eyelashes I've ever seen. And she just had the most beautiful poppy eyes, and she was so patient, and she was just a beautiful little three-year-old. And she was special needs. She couldn't really talk. She could not walk by herself, but she was just a gorgeous baby. And then she died. And a baby death is never good. I mean, it's never fun. It's never, you know, it's never something that's easy. Seeing a little body not moving anymore. Seeing a little casket. It's just not, it's not good at all. And I remember sitting there in the memorial, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, God, you have to speak to me. You have to, and I begin to cry out to God, because sometimes we just sit there in our times and we're like, well, God speaks to me, then he's going to speak to me. You know, but we have to cry out and we have to show him that we want to hear from him. So I began to cry. I'm like, hey, God, you have to, seriously, you have to speak to me right now. And I'm sitting there and I remember he said, look around you. And I looked around. And there's all these people there. And they're all there to see this little girl named Mercy. And he began to literally speak into life. And he said, 2 months ago, this child came here. 2 months ago, you found this child. She was abandoned. She was sexually abused. She was malnourished. And she was depressed. And this child, she's been living here for 2 months. You've been feeding her. You've been bathing her. Unconditional love. I mean, this girl was like, I mean, everyone loved her, so it was like she was getting all the love, you know what I'm saying? And she was hooked up. And then I believe God spoke to me that he said, there's two ways this child could have died. She could have been wrapped in a bag, like most of the children we found, wrapped up in a bag, thrown into the river, wrapped up in a bag, you know, thrown into the latrine, thrown into poop, and then you find her that way. But I didn't let her die that way. I brought her here. And there are people who were, you know, we're sitting there and we're remembering, you know, when she did this, when she did that, when she pushed over so-and-so. And we're laughing because it was good, because her life was good. You see, if God wouldn't have rescued her, if he wouldn't have shown that grace, then she would have had no name. No one would have known her story. No one would have recognized her beautiful eyelashes. No one would remember when she did this, when she did that. And God said, I loved her and I showed her grace and I showed her mercy. And I brought her here for a specific reason. And you see, I believe that God loves his children. And that's where God fit in my picture. I began to see that God has unconditional love for us. And I think the biggest thing that opened up my eyes was that I knew this before I left, but I think it was just empowered once I got there that our God isn't fair, but he's just. And I think that's the only way to get around all that. That's the only way to fit it in, is that he is not fair, but he is a just God. And so honestly, I just believe that we have over there, I mean, just seeing those kids, you know, some of them didn't ask to be born into that. Some of them didn't ask to be born into a village that has absolutely no money, to be born into a family that abuses them, to be born into a family where they were going to get malnourished. But we weren't born into that. And I'm not saying, oh, don't take this for granted. Don't take your car. I don't care. Take your car. I don't care. What we shouldn't take for granted is our lives. The fact that we have something to give. And I'm not saying go to Africa and you know, go and give your life there. But I'm saying we have something special. We have a knowledge of Jesus Christ. And we have a knowledge that when he died on that cross, that death doesn't have a sting anymore. That we don't have to go to hell. That we don't have to live in sadness. That we don't have to live in this darkness. And so what I'm saying is take your life and do something with it. You know, take your everyday life and touch somebody, because guess what? This church is amazing. When I was out there, every time I talked to my sister, oh, I miss the rock. Oh, I miss the rock. I mean, I was at a life-changing place with orphanages, with babies home, with the villages, with LRA stuff. I mean, I was there, but I missed the rock. Because the rock is changing San Bernardino. Because the rock is doing something huge where we're at. And so what I'm saying is just, we need to get involved. We need to do something with our everyday lives. This church is phenomenal. I'm like tempted to go every single service this week. Because like I missed a whole 6 months of it. I need to like suck it up. And so I'm just here to encourage you that a man in Africa, God's doing something great. But here in San Bernardino, oh, snap. God is doing something better. So that's it. I love you guys.